I was hearing him out of the blue, and what struck me was he was talking about the combining of spiritual beliefs and politics and social justice. And in my interest in social justice, my world of studying esoteric and ancient wisdom and spirituality, and my friends who were into social justice, they didn't want to talk about quote-unquote spirituality, and the spiritualist people didn't want to talk about politics. I mean, it just seemed like there were two worlds that I was in. But Benjamin Cram, in his lecture, and is talking about the emergence of Maitreya, combined the two and showed how they're intertwined completely. As we were talking about before, the human rights of humanity allows our spiritual nature to develop.
Hello, everyone. I'm your host, David Minot II. Today we're asking, how does Maitreya's plan bring social justice? On this episode, host Diana Gold Holland interviews Ellen Turgeson on how humanity will soon actually be expressing the golden rule globally, because not only is it practical, but also because we have the help of great enlightened teachers who have emerged now to advise us. This week's audio guest, Ellen Turgeson, is a spiritual and social activist who focuses on why this is happening now in world history, how we can actively participate both individually and collectively in this momentous process, and what we can expect and do as Maitreya and the Masters of Wisdom give impetus to all the protests, rallies, and demonstrations that are happening on record scale throughout the world. Maitreya himself has already made hundreds of TV appearances as an ordinary man with an extraordinary blueprint to inspire and guide us, since we will have to be the willing builders of, as he put it, the shining temple of truth, i.e. the new civilization. So often people hearing this are skeptical or think that we're just dreaming, dreamers. However, here at Planetary Makeover, we've done several other episodes with experts who have weighed in on the astounding principle that there are extremely practical methods already in place that could help put into effect sooner rather than later these needed changes. And you can find these episodes on the Planetary Makeover YouTube page. And one of those episodes was about how if no one on the planet was lacking their basic needs via universal basic income, we could solve a great many of the world's ills. And another was about the economy of sharing our commonly held planetary resources. And one was about a blueprint for just how to accomplish this. Those episodes and this one today reflect perfectly the advice of the world teacher, Maitreya. And I myself am a spiritual activist focused on the basic human right of housing and how to solve the injustices associated with that here in the Boston, Massachusetts area. So let's listen now while Diana Gold Holland and Ellen Turgeson discuss how to solve these problems worldwide.
This is your co-host, Diana Gold Holland, broadcasting from, well, today it's sunny Vancouver. Always beautiful. Welcome to our show. We have a very special show prepared today on the emergence of Maitreya. Why now? What's next? And how can we participate? I'm just going to give the very bare bones of our story for new listeners now, welcoming you in particular, new listeners, because Ellen is here to flesh out the big picture with us. So here are the bare bones. Premise number one, that at this very difficult time in human history, we are not alone. In fact, we never have been, but we are specifically not alone now. We have friends in very high places who are here to help us now. These are perfected masters who have gone beyond all the human frailties to gain mastery over themselves and move a little bit further down the path of divinity than we are. And so they have come to help and counsel us at this time, to provide the advice that will help us to build a new and better world for all in the ashes of this old one, which is fast disappearing. And at their head, at the head of the perfected masters, stands the master of all the masters, who is known as Lord Maitreya. This is his personal name. He is the representative of the faculty of divine love incarnate here and now in the world, and stands at the head of the other masters in directing and counseling us. So that's the bare bones. My guest today, Ellen Turgeson, is a registered nurse and a registered massage therapist practicing in Madison, Wisconsin. She is also a longtime Share International volunteer, Share International being the organization with which our show is affiliated. And Ellen is also a longtime student of the Ageless Wisdom teachings, which we will find out more about later. And she's also a good friend of mine. Now, Ellen has long been interested in the reappearance story, as we are calling the emergence of Maitreya and the Masters of Wisdom into the world. She's long been fascinated about why the emergence is happening, particularly now in world history, what we can expect as Maitreya and the Masters step forward into full public view, and how we can actively participate both individually in our own lives and collectively as part of humanity in this great undertaking. So it is my very great pleasure to welcome Ellen. Good to have you on the show.
Thank you, Diana. I'm so happy to be with you and your audience and honored to be on the program.
Why, thank you. That's mutual. Listen, let's dig right into the story. The first question is, why now at this particular time is the emergence occurring?
Yes, well, in my studies and paying attention to this story, there are three themes that have come forward as to why Maitreya and the Masters have come forward at this time in human evolution. And one of the reasons is that we're changing the age. And we've heard of the new age, the age of Aquarius. And our solar system is entering the influence of Aquarius. It's leaving the influence of Pisces and entering the influence of Aquarius. Now, these cycles are very long, 2,500 years. And we're just at the beginning, at the dawn of Aquarius now. At the change of every age, there's a teacher. When the Piscean age began 2,000 plus years ago in Palestine, Jesus embodied the teachings of the Piscean age in conjunction with and the world teacher Maitreya as well.
I'll just interrupt just a second here, Ellen, to apprise people. The Piscean age is the age of Pisces in the astrological vocabulary, and this is the age that is coming to an end now as the dawning of the age of Aquarius starts. So just a little note for people who may not be familiar with that.
Perfect. Thank you. And each age has energies that influence humanity. The age of Pisces influenced humanity to develop its individuality. People became cognizant that they were counted as individuals. The energy of Aquarius now is emphasizing the work of humanity as a group, of humans seeing themselves not only as individuals, but as members of one group, one humanity, brothers and sisters together, interconnected, and of different religions, different colors, different nationalities, but that we're one humanity. And at this time, in order to make the change into seeing and working as one, the Masters and Maitreya have come to help us at this time. So the first reason for now is the dawning of the age of Aquarius. The second reason that they're coming now is they are responding to the cries of humanity. And there's a spiritual law of invocation, evocation. And that law, it's sort of the teaching of no prayer goes unanswered.
Right, like invocation meaning kind of like a prayer, right?
Correct.
But kind of like a prayer plus an invitation combined. We invoke. We try to pull in.
Right, right. It would be the call for help and the response.
Right.
The call for help and the response. And this call was very strong around World War II with the suffering of humanity. And at that time, Maitreya, in 1945, made the decision to come forward in response to the invocative cry of humanity's suffering. Now, that cry, as it wasn't just during World War II, it continues in the cries of the refugees in Syria, the cries of people suffering with poverty and hunger. Maitreya himself says that the suffering of people who are starving is his deepest anguish, and for this he has come. So the cries of humanity have been responded to by divinity, and the sign of that response is present, the emergence of Maitreya and the Masters on Earth to help us.
And we kind of see this, we do see this at the beginning of every age. Maitreya made the decision to come. If you remember the Bible story of Jesus, whom Maitreya overshadowed, part of his consciousness entered that of Jesus, and Jesus served as the great teacher for the last age, the age of Pisces. In the Bible, there's a vignette whereby at one point he lays down his carpenter tools and says, "My hour has come," and then goes out and begins his ministry. So that was Jesus at the beginning of the previous age, but down all of the ages we have had such great teachers come for us, and we know them by mythical names like Hermes, Mithra, Shankaracharya, and of course the most famous, maybe I'm speaking out of turn here, but very, very many people are aware of the Buddha, who came in a previous age as well, and who himself predicted the coming of Maitreya and even had his name correctly. So our friends, the Buddhists, are expecting Maitreya Buddha, and as you say, he is here now.
Yes. So the first two reasons why now is the change of the age to Aquarius.
Right.
And always there's a teacher. The second is the cry of humanity for help and assistance.
Right.
And then the third is that humanity itself has demonstrated a will to goodness, a desire to serve, and the ability to share. Humanity itself has shown that it is ready to be taught, to be directed into these ways that are to be of help to humanity.
So what's a couple of examples of that, Ellen?
We're seeing worldwide demonstrations for economic justice in Paris. They've been having worldwide demonstrations for economic justice. And even after terrorist attacks, there are demonstrations for peace. Humanity wants peace and not war. And the worldwide manifestations for the environment and kayaks surrounding oil rigs and people risking their lives, chaining themselves to these tubes so that they can't dig trenches to bring oil for oil and contamination. Right. So humanity is working towards environmental justice, economic justice, and peace in worldwide demonstration.
And we see things, of course, like the solidarity with the refugees
Correct.
Happening, And basically humanity is waking up and finding its voice. And therefore, I think we're showing a little bit of maturity here, whereby Maitreya and the Masters of Wisdom understands that we will be more ready to listen to their advice and counsel.
Exactly. And they are here to shine a light in our darkened room to show us the way.
Ellen, when we were talking about the show, you surprised me a bit in saying what we can expect is what we're seeing now. And that really hit home for me. So let's talk about that.
Well, at this time, we're in some ways we're in the chaos of an old age ending and a new age that is just getting started. And so what we can expect is to see, for instance, the whole global climate change is real, and huge wildfires are forcing thousands from their homes, like in your area of Fort McMurray. But we also see that thousands of people are welcoming them into their homes in Edmonton. So we see that millions of refugees are escaping war in their home countries from the Middle East, and people in Nova Scotia are welcoming them into their community. These are just little examples, but what we're seeing is there are catastrophes happening to humanity, but humanity is responding in kind to help humanity. Human beings are helping human beings and seeing in them, there but for the grace of God go I. And so I think we can expect to see tragedies happening, but people responding, and with the working in groups and people trying to work to end the tragedies, end the war, and assuage the global climate change. But speaking of expectations, Diana, all religions are expecting a coming one. All religions, the Jews await the Messiah, Christians await the reappearance of the Christ. As you said, the Buddhists await Maitreya Buddha, the Hindus await Krishna. And our understanding is that there aren't five great ones. There's one great one that we're all expecting, and he is here, and it is Maitreya, the world teacher. And he comes for all people, even though the religions all await him, he comes for all people, religious and non-religious. And his priorities are not to establish a new religion. He says, stay with your own religions. All the great religions are sound and can lead people to higher consciousness and goodness. But his priorities are that every human being on earth, and this is where humanity as one comes in, every human being on earth, whatever their condition is right now, should have and will have an equal right to education, to food, to a roof over their heads, to shelter, to health care, and the fulfillment of their potential as human beings. And that moves me, because at this time, there are people who cannot enjoy life, enjoy learning, enjoy creating, enjoy using their talents, because they're working, they're trying to just eke out a living, or they don't have work and they're starving. And so Maitreya's priorities are that every human being have these basic needs met so that they can live a dignified life, a life of dignity. And out of that dignity will come divinity. When God comes to earth, God is in us, in our souls. And if we can have our human needs met, we can live our soul-directed lives. And that is what moves me as probably as much as anything. And that to go to bed and not think, oh, I'm in bed, but there's somebody who's homeless on the sidewalk, probably not that far from my house. And that bothers me. It bothers all of us. And so to know that everybody's got a bed would be fantastic. And that, for that, Maitreya has come to impulse us to help make that happen for all of humanity.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention a book of early messages that were collected called Messages from Maitreya the Christ. This is edited by Benjamin Krem, the chief spokesman for all of this information. And in this message that was delivered very early in Maitreya's being here, through Mr. Krem at a public lecture, Maitreya said, "How can you be content with the modes within which you now live? When millions starve and die in squalor, when the rich parade their wealth before the poor, when each man is his neighbor's enemy, when no man trusts his neighbors. For how long must you live thus, my friends? For how long can you support this degradation?"
Amen.
And he continues by saying, "My plan and my duty is to reveal to you a new way, a way forward, which will permit the divine in man to shine forth."
And that says it.
Yeah.
And that is why we at Share the National are trying to make the presence of Maitreya known throughout the world so that people can be working for these same priorities along with the help of Maitreya. There are signs of hope, and I saw one on Friday, signs of hope of people coming together and forgetting their differences and working together, and it was the funeral of the boxer Muhammad Ali.
Oh, yeah.
Quite famous in the United States and worldwide. But at his funeral, which he designed, he prearranged the service, and it was in an auditorium, but on the altar, let's say, on the front stage, there were 9 clergy people from all different religions, Islam, Christian, Jews, Buddhists, Native Americans, and others. And as Muhammad Ali's life was a testimony, his funeral, his memorial service, was a renunciation of sectarianism and an embrace of inclusivity that moved me to see everyone up there and speaking and to think he arranged this to say, now look, all of the religions can get along. We're all people. And I want you all with me as I make my passing.
Great man. And you know, that reminds me, it's also a demonstration of people working together in groups.
Correct.
Which is another very strong point of the new civilization.
Correct. And I heard something else too that gave me hope. There was an article that was just published, which we'll put on the Share on the Air Radio Facebook, a link to it, by a woman named Virginia Perrottin from Leeds University in London. She wrote a study on worker cooperatives, people working together in groups, comparing them to the more standard corporate, when workers work in cooperatives, it's a democratic system where there's one vote for each worker.
Right.
Decisions are made in a group process rather than a CEO and a board of directors making the decisions for everyone. She came up with some interesting results. And I'll name a few. One is that cooperatives provide more stable employment and have less layoffs and downsizing. The other is that cooperatives are more productive than conventional enterprises. One more finding was that workers work smarter and better and more efficiently when they're working in cooperatives. Two more. Cooperatives retain a larger share of their profits and put them back into the company because that's what the workers vote for. And the last one, the executive pay and the non-executive pay difference is much narrower. So this study was in Latin America, Europe, and the United States. So the benefits of people working in groups and working together for a common end is proving to be more economical than our private corporate system that we're used to seeing now. That gave me huge hope as well.
Well, also that it's more just with the flattening of the pay ranges and where people have more of a voice.
Yes, so, exactly.
You know, I was going to say, well, I hope she's got some good statistics behind this because it's very hopeful. But at the same time, Ellen, it's a no-brainer.
Correct.
When people get to own their creativity, you know, a lot of really good stuff can happen.
And the nice thing about this study is that Ms. Perrottin is very credentialed and has 3 pages. When you read the article, it's it gives great credence. So this isn't just hearsay and we think it's true. It is true. It's absolutely true.
Right. Well, you know, I've got to put in a plug here for the magazine Share International, which can be found at www.share-international.org, because since the magazine's inception in 1982, Share International has sought out, the stories of just exactly this new trade of cooperation and people being together, working together. There are, instead of reporting the gloom and doom and rape and murder and pillage and sensationalism that the mainstream media does, Share International shows the link between the emergence of Maitreya, that spiritual component, and the what is happening in current events as his energies, which are pouring daily into the world, are helping us to transform our world, whether we know it or not. People are responding, they are coming together, and they are creating all kinds of good things. Now, this is what a good portion of Share International magazine covers. The June issue has stuff on the Zika virus, perspectives of higher guidance of Maitreya and the Masters of Wisdom, and of course, all of these stories of hope and progress. So check it out. www.share-international.org/international. Ellen, it's a really great pleasure every time in interviewing a guest to find out how you found out about the reappearance story. What's your background? How has it touched you? What is Ellen's emergence story?
Thank you. I'd love to. Before I start that, though, I have one more point to finish up of what we can expect. And that's just that we can expect the old forms to continue to crumble. The old ways aren't working, and we all know that. The old ways of competition, of war, and of contamination aren't working. So we'll continue to see the signs of them crumbling. But we also this will call out the best in people. And the reason we know it will call out the best in people is because Maitreya and the Masters are here shining a light in the dark room of the chaos, shining a light on what we can do. And humanity has already, as we said earlier, shown its readiness for these changes. Humanity has shown the readiness. The old systems are crumbling and calling out the best in us. And the Masters and Maitreya are here to shine a light on how we can move forward and help our own tendencies toward goodness, which we have already demonstrated.
Yes, and we can see this, becoming clearer and clearer over the months and years. I just wanted to make the point that the crumbling of all these institutions, we shouldn't be, very terribly worried about all that. It's simply the Piscean energy that held together all of those institutions is on its way out. In fact, it's pretty much out the door. And the new energies that are coming in will allow us to create new and better forms that best reflect the energy patterns for this coming age. And we see early the coming age, the age of brotherhood and synthesis. And so we see this more and more people are waking up and realizing our unity, realizing our one voice. And we've got things like the internet, which is totally a group in endeavor. Things like Wikipedia. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. But these new energies are finding their way to come in, which
yes.
is really, really encouraging. So that's great. But let's get down to your story, Ellen.
Okay. I was raised on a farm in Wisconsin, came into the city after high school and went to nursing school. I became a nurse, had a very successful career, and was doing great. But there was an inquietude in me because I knew that there was an inquietude in me because I became a consumer. I noticed in myself that I was, when I would get the Sunday paper, pulling out the ads and reading the ad before I read the world, the news, and more interested in what I could buy next than what I could do next. I mean, even I was a nurse helping people, but my hobby seemed to be acquiring possessions. Now, I was young and hadn't had much in my childhood, but so that led me to leave the United States and join
a wait a minute. So becoming disillusioned about the consumer society.
Yeah, and myself. Uh-huh. Becoming, I was sort of bored with it. I think I didn't critique the consumer society at that time. I just said to myself, is this all there is for your life? Is this all you're ever going to do is work, get a paycheck and spend it? Really?
Right.
So that was, it was a discontent in my own heart, and very much a discontent and a boredom with that. I got bored with it. And so I joined a volunteer organization and moved to Lima, Peru in Latin America and worked as a nurse for 4 years in 1985 to 1989. And so I learned about poverty, and I learned about the fact that some people have and some people don't. I remember seeing a lot of hungry. We worked with malnourished children and their families, but yet there were food stands that had tons of food. And I remember asking, there's all this food, but yet this baby isn't thriving. What is the problem? And they said, well, we don't have the money to buy it. That was nothing more, nothing less. It wasn't a lack of food. It wasn't a lack of food. There was no money to buy it. And I also at that time could see some of the north-south inequalities globally as well. So after my time, and so I was quite my consciousness of how the world worked and the haves and have-nots and the inequality was honed in that time. And I also made the best of friends and learned Spanish. And so that was great. I came back to the United States and became a massage therapist. And a client of mine came to me and said, I have an organization that I think you'd be interested in, Share International. And we were talking about my time in Peru. She said, because there's a guy in London, which is Maitreya's home base, a guy in London who wants to end world hunger. I said, great. She gave me a Share International magazine. I went home. I looked up the website and I thought, great, this is great. But I didn't think it involved me. And so I didn't go back to it again. I mean, I knew it was nice happening. I sort of put it in the category like Oxfam. It was happening in England. And then about a year or maybe more later, I was listening to a web broadcast, like we're doing a podcast. And Benjamin Krim, the spokesman for Share International that we had mentioned, was talking.
And actually, Benjamin Krim is the chief editor of Share International magazine. And it was put together in part to cover the progress in the emergence of Maitreya. So that's why he's a key component in this. Benjamin Krim has been lecturing for many decades now on the emergence. He is the author of some 16 or 17 books, which are absolutely fascinating. Pick up any book, open it at any page, and I guarantee you'll keep reading. So Benjamin Krim is very, very much central to this story. And his story of how he got involved is really interesting. So check out the Share International website. Share-international.org, and you can find out a lot of very interesting facts about Mr. Krim himself. So you were hearing him on a podcast.
I was hearing him out of the blue. And what struck me was he was talking about the combining of spiritual beliefs and politics and social justice. And in my interest in social justice, my world of studying esoteric and ageless wisdom and spirituality, and my friends who were into social justice, they didn't want to talk about quote unquote spirituality, and the spiritualist people didn't want to talk about politics. I mean, it just seemed like there were two worlds that I was in. But Benjamin Krim in his lecture and his talking about the emergence of Maitreya combined the two and showed how they're intertwined completely. As we were talking about before, the human rights of humanity allows our spiritual nature to develop. So I went online to find out about Benjamin Krim, and it was the same website as the one that my client had given me.
Uh-huh.
So I started reading the website, looking at it more carefully, ended up staying up all one night reading reading. My heart was quickened, and it made so much sense, but also there was a lot of esoteric spirituality and a lot of understanding the world and why it is the way it is. These Aquarian energies coming in, the changes that can be made. It gave me great hope, but I was so interested in it. So I copied a lot of the information out on my printer, and I took it to my spiritual teacher at the time, who was a Brazilian woman who had studied with an elderly Brazilian spiritualist in Rio de Janeiro. I showed it her, and she said, "Oh, Benjamin Krem." She said, "My teacher, when I came to the United States, said, please find Benjamin Krem, because the one he is waiting for and the one I am waiting for is the same one." So they were talking.
So her teacher said this to her.
Yes, and he was a contemporary of Benjamin Krem's. He was in his 80s at the time. Benjamin Krem was in his 80s, and they knew one another. He knew Benjamin Krem, and he asked my teacher to look up Benjamin Krem when he came to New York. But my teacher didn't speak English very well and didn't do it. In the end, we went to New York to hear a Benjamin Krem lecture together, which was a thrill for her and great for me. So after that, it all made sense, and I knew that this was the movement, so to speak, that I wanted to be involved in. And because I want humanity to have enough to eat, that whole desire to see some equality in people's needs being met, that was enlivened and that I saw so much in Peru. I wanted that to happen. And I knew we needed higher help than we were seeing at the time. So
yeah, absolutely. And nobody, absolutely nobody comes into incarnation to starve to death.
Correct.
And imagine, you know, when you see the pictures of these African mothers with their babies dying in their arms, I mean, how can your heart not break?
That's right.
When you see things like that, and all the, you know, the drowning refugees and all that kind of thing. It's just, but, you know, I wanted to make one point. This is not all gloom and doom. In fact, in Maitreya, in those messages that I was talking about that had been delivered, he never asks for anything except to, you know, make known the fact of my presence. But in one place, he did ask for something of us. And what he said was, "I need your capacity for joy."
Yes. You know, that brings up a story, Diana. You may have mentioned this on previous programs, but at sometimes Maitreya or the masters can come with us, present themselves to us in like as a normal person and give a message. And that happened to me. I was walking in the park in January, not this past, a year ago January, and it was extraordinarily warm, like 70 degrees, but it was January. And I was feeling upset because of global warming, thinking it should be snow and it should be cold, but it's not. And it was upsetting me. And I was feeling blue about that. And a man out of nowhere bicycled by me, looked me in the eyes and said, "It's a beautiful day. Isn't it a beautiful day? We should be thanking God for this beautiful day." And then he bicycled off. And I just had this feeling as he went by, I was feeling, "Oh, woe is me, because the weather's too warm for January." And I wrote it to actually Share International, and it was confirmed that it was a master giving me a message of joy.
What was the take-home lesson for you of that?
Lesson for me is as an individual, I don't have enough consciousness to understand the wider perspective of things. And I lack a sense of proportion to forget the positive changes that are happening in the world. And I also was not letting in joy. I wasn't allowing myself to, I think those of us who work for social change sometimes can tend to be a little depressed. And so I wasn't letting in the joy of a daily moment of sunshine and fresh air that a lot of humans can't even, and a walk in the park. And this bicyclist reminded me that we should be thanking God for everything, for a beautiful day, even though the and pace ourselves. And even though there are difficulties in the world, don't be afraid to enjoy a morning walk. And that was.
Now, I know this was confirmed as an appearance for you. And who was this?
It was Master Jesus.
It was the Master Jesus. For our friends who are new to this story, it is indeed true that Maitreya, the Master Jesus, another master who works in Japan, a few masters now, and some of their representatives are actually appearing to people, sometimes quite physically, as happened with Ellen here. And there's usually a lesson involved in that appearance, and it's very particular to the person at hand. It can be something, you know, really normal, like if you have a prejudice against smoking or drinking or something like that, the interaction can be with a homeless person who seems to be drunk or smoking or what have you, and to help people develop tolerance. But the thing is, the message is always very, very beautifully and subtly presented. I mean, somebody just saying it's a beautiful day triggered all of this in you, Ellen.
Yes.
And so that's pretty magic indeed. Now, you were talking about, you know, seeing the bigger picture and not getting depressed. In that respect, let's move on to, you know, what we can do and things, ways we can help help the emergence and help humanity forward. One of the points I know you want to make, and I really want to stress this, is that no future is fixed.
Right. We don't know the future. And individually and collectively, we can download a new future for humanity. And that's exciting. Benjamin Krim has talked about living a soul-directed life, meaning a life that is more influenced by our soul than our personality, which tends to want to be selfish and
domineering and
looking after ourselves,
ego-based, et cetera, et cetera.
So I asked Benjamin Krim one time at a conference, what is an indicator that someone is living a soul-directed life? How could you tell if somebody was or if you are? And he said, do your best at whatever you do. If someone's doing their very, very best and living up to their full potential, that they're living a soul-directed life. So not everybody is an esotericist, not everybody's a spiritualist, but everyone's working, everyone's a human being. And as all human beings do their best at whatever it is they're doing, and cutting the grass or giving a speech or changing the world or changing your baby's diaper, and striving towards excellence will raise up all of humanity. Since we're one body, you might say, the health of the liver makes the intestines more healthy. The health and striving for perfection and excellence in one person can inspire another person to strive for excellence, can inspire another person.
Absolutely,
so,
yeah.
So doing your best can help elevate all of humanity, and it doesn't require anything special, but be where you are and do your best.
Mm-hmm.
Another way that we can help these energies come in is working in groups. Try to work, find groups to be involved in. As we said, the Aquarian energies favor and support work in groups. And when two people and more people are together, then there's what I call factor X. So there's what I know, and there's what you know, and we share it. But in the sharing, it's like spices in a soup. There can be another flavor that comes out. There can be another flavor. I call it factor X. When people in a group are working together, I think that's when the Christ energy or the Aquarian energy can be present, because it's alive. It's alive. There's chemistry. There's a chemistry.
Well, there's even a saying in the Bible about that, right? When two or three are gathered in my name.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And it's like two spices working together in soup.
Yeah, I like that.
Then the other, so doing our best and working in groups, and that was shown also in the study of worker cooperatives, that workers who work cooperatively in groups accomplish more, do better, and are more profitable in the long run for everyone than people working in other forms of
right.
work.
Right. We don't have too much time left, Ellen. So I want to pick up on one point that you made to me some time ago, which is don't make habits out of people.
Yeah, that's very important. No, because we said no, the future is not fixed. Nothing is completely good. No one is completely good. No one is completely bad. And when we habituate our responses to people or our judgments of people, then we lock out factor X. We don't blend the spices. What I mean for that is to be curious about others, even others that we don't agree with. If we really buy the concept that we are one, that we're one body, that we're one humanity, and we have to get along, then we have to find ways, even the people that we disagree with the most, to not habituate, to not say, oh, I know what that person believes, and I don't believe that, so I can't walk on the left side of the road because that person's on the left side of the road. It limits even where we can amble
right.
in the world. So
right.
to not make habits out of people is an important concept. And another one is, as we are in the world, to state more openly what we are for, because we're very good about saying what we're against. We're against this, we're against that. But what are we for? I think if we can define more clearly that I am for having clean drinking water for every baby and every family in the world, including Flint, Michigan. I am for having equal pay for having an increased minimum wage so people can live decent lives. To say those more out loud, I think one way that I've become habituated is saying what I'm against more than what I'm for. And I'm trying to discipline myself to decide what is it that I want? Because those are my priorities. I want people to have enough health care. I want people to have housing. I want that. And I think the more we say it, the more we can normalize it, and the more it doesn't seem like it's something unattainable.
Right, exactly. You're showing up for it.
Correct,
yeah.
correct.
Yeah.
And then the last is any kind of service to others, any kind of service to others. Doing service is the evidence of love, of humans loving humans as God loves us. And the soul only knows how to serve. So serving another in any way is a way to help humanity move forward. So doing our best, working in groups, providing service for others, not making habits out of people, being curious, keeping the doors open of our mind open, and saying what we are for. And then the last can be meditation, because quiet individual meditation connects us with our own soul, and group meditation allows us to bring the energies of Aquarius into the world. And that would include transmission meditation, which many people who are involved with Share International participate in transmission
yeah.
meditation.
Transmission meditation is a form of group meditation that was introduced by the masters through Benjamin Krem, specifically now at the dawning of the Age of Aquarius, to bring in those energies to help create this new civilization. Again, that's something else that you can find out either by going to the website transmissionmeditation.org or seeing about it on the Share International, share-international.org magazine. Website. We're going to be running out of time soon, so I suggest that you, if you want to follow up on any of this, be sure to check out free downloads of four of Mr. Krem's books. It's already time to go. Thank you, Ellen.
As most of us are aware, our world has arrived at a moment of profound transformation. As millions call for peace, justice, many are seeking ways to help serve the world, and at the same time, looking for an effective means of personal, spiritual development. Transmission meditation is a way to do both. Introduced in 1974 by a master of spiritual wisdom, transmission is a group meditation that makes available the benevolent energies pouring into the planet in an ever-mounting rhythm and potency. Transmission groups worldwide receive and transform these energies sent by a group of extraordinary teachers, the Masters of Wisdom, led by Maitreya, the World Teacher. Thus stepped down, these energies can be used in the betterment of all life on Earth. This meditation also has a salutary effect on the individual participating in the meditation. It is safe, scientific, non-denominational, and will not interfere with any other religious or spiritual practice. In fact, it will just enhance them. So it's for the religious and non-religious alike. So now, just focus your attention at the chakra center between the eyebrows, called the Ajna Center, which is the center of the will. And let's read together the great invocation and meditate as long as you wish, holding your attention there when it drifts away by thinking Om silently, inwardly. The Great Invocation. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Visit us on Facebook at #PlanetaryMakeover. This show has been a production of planetarymakeover.org. At our website, we have a link to our latest bi-weekly Planetary Makeover show. Shows are organized by category or by most recently produced show. For more background information, visit www.shareinternational-west.org. That's www.shareinternational-west.org. For related books, DVDs, and CDs by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the world teacher Maitreya, please go to share-ecart.com. That's share-ecart.com. We also invite you to watch another show that we really love entitled What in the World is Happening? And that show, which you don't want to miss, is produced by Share International Canada. Please view episodes of What in the World is Happening on demand at youtube.com/@whatintheworldishappeningnow. It live streams mostly on the second Saturday of every month at the Share International Canada Facebook page.